I dialed correctly.
Well, it's before 9 o'clock, isn't it?
Oh. Yeah, I guess they hung up early or something.
Oh, they must have.
Okay, well, let me get you going here. Just hang on.
Thank you very much. I wonder if people heard us talking. Alan?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know if I had heard. Yeah, they probably did. But it was, yeah, what the hell. There we go. See, there's Grandpa.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed now? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and it is the 12th of April in the year 2006. I will begin here with a spiritual message. This is from A Course in Miracles. I have this little box of cards sitting right at the table here, which is why I've been using these, but there are statements or quotes in here that to me are worth sharing with you. This is from the workbook, page 76. There is a place in you where there is perfect peace. There is a place in you where nothing is impossible. There is a place in you where the strength of God abides. That's from A Course in Miracles, from the workbook. There is a place in you where the strength of God abides. And we have a special guest with us this evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm making jokes. Alan Watt is with us. And Alan, as many of you, maybe all of you, tuned in Monday night. Or I understand also that it was played again last night, earlier. Alan was on the George Noory Coast to Coast program for 3 hours on Monday night. And I stayed up, it was 2 to 5. And even when it was over, I was totally wide awake. And to me, it was the most beautiful, wonderful, like I said last Wednesday night, it seemed like a miracle for him to have had the opportunity to reach so many people with the information that only Alan Watt can share in Alan Watt's way. And so, therefore, that was pretty cool, Alan.
Yeah, it was. Let's see, we all get our 5 minutes of fame.
Well, actually, to me, it was magnificent. You know, there was nothing really, I don't know if there was anything you said that we haven't, that our listeners haven't heard and that we haven't discussed. But I was sitting there listening, and I was trying to listen from the viewpoint, if you would, of a person who this stuff wasn't so familiar.
Yes.
And it was the way that it flowed. It was the way that you presented it. It's another classic, as I can see.
Yeah, well, the response has been awfully good. And I think there's still 19,000 on the website today.
Oh, my.
Just looking into it, yeah.
That is just, that's fabulous. Well, I've heard from some people also, having, you had mentioned Sweet Liberty, and, of course, there's a link at your website, and I had a few emails from some of the listeners, and a friend called because she was listening to George Noory and heard you mention my name. We haven't talked for about 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
But it was pretty cool. But the George Noory, of course, we know that Coast to Coast is syndicated on, I guess, almost 500 AM stations.
Yeah.
And we know that the media is controlled, and we know that everybody that is on Coast to Coast is not a credible person. But I heard him, and I thought he asked you some really excellent questions.
Yeah.
And these were questions that he asked in response to something you said, not like, oh, here's a question laid out, you know, to ask.
Yeah.
And I think that, at least what I heard, it was getting through to him, because I heard him sigh a couple of really long, deep sighs, Alan.
Yes.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I think what's happening now, I think I said it on the show too, that everyone has this feeling of expectation that something's coming down. And everyone in the business of media or entertainment, it's all mixed together now. It's so interwoven, media and entertainment. Even your local 6 o'clock news is half Hollywood and movies and so on. So entertainment, fiction and non-fiction have become so tightly interwoven that it's difficult for the average person, and even those involved in the media, to actually tell the difference at times. They're living in half fantasy, and so they ignore the nasty realities that they see in the corner of their vision coming their way. And I think some of them are starting to see that they can't keep going on in this direction and deny, and just simply go off into the fantasy side of things. Because what's happening now is so real, so vitally important for everyone and everyone to come, that people have to be aware of what's going on and to change direction, because there's only one direction we're heading in, and it's a nasty ending for most people.
Alan?
Yeah?
I had a couple or three emails that were saying, you know, if this is all true, what are we supposed to do? Is there anything we can do about it?
Yeah.
And, I, you know, did send back some of my own comments, but how would you please respond to that, because we may even have new listeners tonight.
Yeah.
From, you know, the George Noory broadcast. Would you respond to that question that maybe lots and lots of people have?
They have to do, and it's very difficult at this stage of the game, but people have to do a crash course and reality check here. Because if they don't, and I don't mean going off and chasing space aliens or reptilian people and all this stuff that's put out to distract you into the fantasy again till nothing's real. I mean a crash course on what's been happening in the world for at least the last 100 years. That's all they have to really go on. They can go much further back if they want to and see all of the treaties that have been carefully step by step signed into by every country in the planet, except those who are under attack now in the Middle East. That's the reason they're being attacked, to bring the world into this unification process. Who was behind it initially? The NGOs that are funded to push it, and a lot of these NGO groups are ex-politicians,
non-government organizations,
and bureaucrats that are actually employed by big foundations like the Rockefeller Foundation. These are the guys who are really pushing this agenda forward. And last year, for instance, when they signed the Unification in Americas deal, that's a year ago in March, at Waco, Texas, that's a good example of how this was done, because that week, twice that week before the signing, the CFR came out as an official organization for the first time to declare a broadcast to the nation. Now, before we've had the occasional one member of the CFR as an advisor to people, but here they are as a panel with the CFR board behind them saying that we have to unite the Americas to compete with Europe and China. So that they were drafting a bill for the politicians to sign. So they were basically admitting they were behind the setting up of the unification of the Americas, which is true. Because if you go into the history of the CFR, which is just the American branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, It was set up by the Cecil Rhodes and Lord Rothschild foundations in the late 1800s to bring world unification with three world trading blocks. So here we are being guided by non-governmental organizations that are funded by multimillionaires. And we don't vote these guys in, and we have no say in what they do.
Well, and the pathetic thing is that these non-governmental organizations, every single one of them, and there are thousands,
yeah,
are considered,
mm-hmm,
by these wannabe gods,
yeah,
that this is the voice of the people.
This is
That's
the
their people's parliament, Alan.
It's the Soviet. The Soviet meant government by council.
Uh-huh.
And this is the new world Soviet that Mikhail Gorbachev talked about in his last speech when he was still the prime minister or president of the Soviet Union. He made the speech, which is available, and he says communism isn't dying, it's going off to the next stage.
There you go.
And sure enough it was. It ties right into the Norman Dodge report and the Rees Commission to do with the big foundations who said that their purpose was to merge comfortably in America and the West with the Soviet Union.
Alan?
Yeah.
For our listeners on the internet or satellite, at sweetliberty.org we have a resources section, and there's recommended reading and listening and viewing, and I do not recall the name of the book, and you might, that was written by Congressman Reese, or he did maybe the foreword. I think he wrote the book, but maybe it doesn't matter. It was a book that was written based on all the findings of the Reese Committee back in what, 50 whatever. And we have that book listed.
Their foundations, their power, and
foundations, their power and influence. Thank you. That book, folks, if you're interested. Oh my God, Alan, I knew about this. Congressman Reese's, but the book wasn't available at the time.
Yeah.
And then it was reprinted. Chuck had a copy of it. And he was on his way to the airport. This when he was visiting me in Illinois,
mm-hmm,
and he pulled it out of his briefcase.
Oh yeah.
He said he was going to read it on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
I was so excited to have that. I said, "Oh please, you can't." I have the information in that book. It just tells it all without any fancy words.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to the resources section at sweetliberty.org, you'll see the book listed, and we also have the source where you can buy the book. It's probably a paperback. It's not all that expensive either. It's a research book, isn't it, Alan?
Mm-hmm. And it's all documented. I mean,
yes.
What we're talking about here is not some harebrained conspiracy theory. This is all factual publications put out by the big boys themselves. And you can find, you're going to the diaries of Cecil Rhodes when he set up his foundation as a front man for the Rothschilds and for the British elite to bring about world government. And the fastest way they found to unite the whole of Europe and all the many little countries that eventually became the Soviet Union was to create communism and force one system of centralized government over them all, which standardized their culture, their bureaucracies, their laws, everything. And that's why they created the Soviet system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now we're in a blend, we're in a third wave, which is the blending of fascism and communism into the third wave, they call it. So that's where we are now.
Yes. I have a question for you, and you brought it up tonight, and you mentioned this Monday night.
Sure.
When you were, well, first the conversation, I believe, was talking about the depopulation plans,
mm-hmm,
that 90%, 80 to 90% of the population is supposed to be done away with because they don't need any more than that.
Yeah.
And then you mention, because I think maybe somebody had asked, what do you see in the future?
Yeah.
And I was glad to hear you say, I know what they intend,
uh-huh,
because they haven't been successful yet. Doesn't mean they're going to, but we certainly know they're on the track. You mentioned, you know, in the future, these trade blocks, the three, like the Trilateral Commission.
Yeah, yeah.
But then my question is, if there are so few people And the only people left are really people that are left to serve the wannabe gods.
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to do with these trade blocks? I mean...
Everything is a step by step. It's not the end. It's a step towards another part of an agenda.
Okay, what's the next part? But
well,
see,
the next part, they won't need people in the traditional sense. They're going to create... We have the capabilities now.
I know, but Alan, when we talk trade blocks, we're talking commercialism here.
That's for a short time.
Okay, but I understood you, at least it seemed the inference was that would be after the majority of the population had already been done away with. Well,
now, the trade blocks will be up and running about 2010 as three separate, individual trading blocks under world government.
Okay.
That's their agenda. But it's only part way towards the next part, of course.
That's right out of George Orwell's 1984, isn't it?
This is the real never-ending story. And that's what they mean when they say that man is the clay. He's infinitely malleable. He is the source material. He's the raw material. And he can keep shaping us to the next step, to the next step.
Malleable and moldable.
Yeah.
That's what the words were used in Brzezinski's book.
After they signed the Waking deal last March and showed it on the television up here about the unification and Fortress America, etc., the integration of all security forces has been done. And eventually, too, the sharing of tariffs, meaning taxation. After that, another reporter came on from the CFR to give the CFR spin, which is supposed to be our eventual opinion. And he says, well, we've got to unite, he says, to compete with the European Union. You see how they do it? First they create one block, you see, and then they point them and say, oh, gee, we can't compete with them. We've got to do the same thing to compete with them. And once we eventually amalgamate, then they'll say, well, geez, we've got to compete with China. And then you have a race to the bottom for wages. This is how it's all structured. This is deliberate planning.
I know. Yeah. I want to go back to the question.
Mm-hmm.
Besides a person, you know, getting on the fast track, getting up to speed.
Yeah.
I think that the questions that were asked was like, what can I do as an individual? Is there any way we can stop this, et cetera, et cetera? In other words, besides knowing about it, Alan.
I think we're all being... See, they're following the old Revelations plan, which is a plan which has been used many times over. Once again, Revelations is infinitely malleable. They aren't going to be happy until every individual gives allegiance to the system. And we don't realize we're doing it all the time when we're forced to go along with another ridiculous rule or law or fee or whatever it is. And we know that the registration of everybody is coming along here. They want all the heads to be numbered.
I'd say we are already, wouldn't you?
We are, but they also want us to officially have a little biometric card, a little ID
uh-huh.
card. And that's a stepping stone towards a chip implanted. And that's been documented at the Loyola University World Science Meeting, sponsored by the U.S. Department of Commerce. So it's a step-by-step process. So we are acquiescing to every step.
Well, Alan.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does come down to...
As an individual.
Try to get in your car and drive without a license plate.
Well, the thing is, you have two options. You either go the whole way here into oblivion or start saying no now as an individual.
No, but wait a minute. You drive a vehicle. You have no license plate on it.
I'm not talking about licensing. I'm talking about literally taking an ID card that I can't buy or sell without, etc.
Right.
In other words, they can starve me to death if I won't comply. What kind of choice is that? When people give you no choice but theirs, you're really in trouble. And we better understand that quick.
Well, I'm going to repeat something you said a long time ago.
Yeah.
In fact, it was when I was getting frustrated when we were in that first period of our, you know, conversations together on air.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about the Federal Reserve System, the money system.
Yeah.
In fact, I was mentioning Tupper Saucy's book, and I thought it was really cool because he was, you know, using the Constitution that no state could accept anything other than gold and silver coin in legal tender for a debt.
Yeah.
And so there was actually people in towns that were presenting IOUs and saying as soon as there's legal tender. And I thought that was so great. And you said, no. And I said, well, why? And you said, well, because they control the gold too. And I know that is so. And I want to sidetrack here for a second because there's so many people that are pushing to go back to a gold standard.
I know. See, but again, with
they don't
all of this, you see, this starts with what they call in modern history as the beginning of civilization.
Yeah, well,
civilization is their system.
When you said no to that, I said, well,
yeah.
Well, it's better than nothing, isn't it, Alan? And you said, no. I said, well, why? And you said, because you cannot get out of their system by using their system.
Right.
Gold is their system. And then I said, frustratedly, well, then what's your solution?
Yeah.
You know, because if this isn't better than nothing, then you said, if enough people, when enough people understand this, it is going to just dissolve of itself.
It won't be easy, because I'm telling you, people's going to suffer here. People always suffer to get a breathing space in the system. And that's what I mean, a breathing space, which generally lasts about a generation if you're lucky. Because these guys at the top have been at this intergenerationally for thousands of years. And it's literally coming down to a personal choice and everyone's decision. We know, and they know at the top, that we can't go on like this, consuming the way we're consuming. They know this. These are economists at the top. They see the world as their planet and all the resources as being theirs for their offspring in the future. They think about the future. They've trained us not to. They've trained us to think you're being well managed, just let it happen by your betters at the top, these unseen hands at the top, you see. And sure enough, the population, they think in the now, I live in the now and I won't think about tomorrow and I'll just be happy now and live day to day like that. But these guys at the top have looked at the resources of the planet. They look at our present consumption, and they don't intend to allow us to keep consuming at this rate.
They knew it couldn't last.
Yeah.
When they designed the plan,
yeah,
they knew it couldn't last.
Exactly, because they've done this before. I mean, the Sahara at one time was a flourishing subtropical climate. It was flourishing. They found all the skeletons of elephants and all the usual jungle animals, lions and so on, under the Sahara. That was a flourishing place with trees and so on. That was made destitute in an age before this.
Made destitute.
By the same guys who run the system, the predecessors of the same guys who run the system.
How did they make it desolate like that?
They raped it. They raped it and raped it and raped it and used it up, burned it up.
Took all the natural resources and
yeah,
the trees and the plants and...
Yeah, the Egyptians had records of ancient civilizations that had risen to high heights and pinnacles and then simply collapsed. And it's well understood in academic circles that when you live in what is called an advanced culture, meaning you're totally interdependent, everyone is interdependent to live for substance, etc., in that system, then it's the easiest system to collapse completely. How many people today could actually live on their own in the wild?
Well, in the wild, I don't know.
Most of them would give up.
Burning all the
thought, you know.
They're burning all the forests down anyway, Alan.
But what I'm saying is that we are in a system that's been carefully crafted with this present feeding frenzy of cheap junk from China to keep us happy as they go into the next step. And it's all done on debt. Everyone's running credit cards. And when it's time, when everything's completed, they'll just pull it. And then all these massive police forces, which are really just world armies, will come and take care of it. They'll be taken care of, those police guys in the military. They always do that. The Romans did it too, you know.
What do you mean, take care of them?
Of the people who will be rioting. See, the mobs always riot. They're always unorganized when chaos occurs. Most of them never see it coming. And pandemonium breaks loose. That's what they've been carefully building up inside every country in the West for for the last 20-odd years under amalgamated multi-jurisdictional task forces, it's a massive world army to take care of the chaos that they expect to come when most of their plan has been completed. They don't intend to keep us happy and consuming like this, you know.
Do you think, by any stretch of the imagination, that people who are consuming and consuming and consuming are happy, Alan?
It's not a matter of happiness.
That's what I'm saying.
But what I'm saying is that's what they've been trained to do. That's what they think happened. Look at every ad on TV. You got a smiling face next to a toothbrush, to a broom, to a new car. I mean, in other words, everything that you see is supposed to make you happy.
Yes.
And people have been sold on that idea.
And everybody's floundering and wondering what's wrong with their lives.
Well, that's why you've got Dr. Phil's who are guaranteed a...
Yeah, well, you know what?
Income,
you know what it comes down to me?
Uh-huh.
And we are talking about this right now.
Yeah.
Kind of the way I answered one of the questions that was sent to me.
Mm-hmm.
I said it's really up to each and every one of us as an individual, what we're going to do. And the only way, I said, I haven't a clue to say what you should do or what anybody else should do.
Yeah.
Because if we ask and we listen, we'll be guided from within. And it always does. Like you said, it comes down to choice. And every single day and every moment of every single day, we have choices to make.
Yeah.
In within us, every single one of us know the difference, right from wrong.
Yeah.
And maybe it is simply to begin to do that and to take a look at ourselves and to begin to treat one another the way we want. No matter, I'm not saying do unto others the way they do unto you, but to do unto others as we would have them do to us. The possibility there, at least for the individual, that the discernment comes, maybe that inner guidance comes, and whatever it is they're doing is what they're supposed to be doing. But it comes
see,
down.
They've all been trained. This is the problem. Everyone has been trained, and not this generation either. It's been going on for an awful long time. Every generation has been trained. They don't ask questions as to why. They always say, don't ask the questions. This is what religion used to say.
You're not even supposed to question religious questions.
But what I'm saying is that used to be the standard statement given by churches to the commoner. When you asked about the meaning of life, they say, look, don't ask about first and last causes. It's not your problem. Leave that to us. Just you do what you're told.
Yeah.
And that's basically how the public are trained, that they're shoved into this mass conditioning system to come out uniformly, and it's called the educational system. So they all come out with the same opinions, and they think they've been taught things that are true, and they all give the same pat answers, but they've been conditioned all to think in a certain process, which is non-think, really. It's a dumbing down process which eliminates the natural person within. And so they come out uniform, and then the whole purpose they're told is to get them into a job. And then the purpose from then on is to simply support yourself through life in this system. And of course, once they're in the rush of living and caught up in it, they don't have time to ponder very much at all, except they do know really deep down they're not very happy.
I know, but maybe that's why we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've said this yourself, that it isn't for everybody, because the masses have always been the masses.
I know.
And it seems that it's been that way down throughout the ages.
There's always been a large percentage who seem quite content being ruled over by unseen people. They don't even know their names, in fact.
Right, because...
And don't care to.
Basically, they're brain dead.
They're happy slaves, in a sense. They're even though the system they live in gives them neurosis and worry and etc., even though rather than look for any other way, rather than try the unknown, they'll always take the known.
Well, because they're accustomed to the chaos.
Even though the known is going to lead them to disaster.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773, and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Paths Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and to our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
All right, we're back. I was trying to watch the clock there to give us a warning and wasn't able to do it before the break. Are you there, Alan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, okay, the masses.
Uh-huh.
And the way it appears to me is, like, as you said, it's been this way down throughout the ages, mm-hmm. and yet there's always been a few who have escaped it somehow, at least, well, like, I didn't escape it. I just began to wake up, you know, one day, like, hit over the head, because
mm-hmm.
I was there, too. I was... I believed everything that we were taught in history was true.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't believe everything in the Bible was true. I knew that. But what I'm saying is, there are people who eventually, if they haven't escaped it right from the get-go, they wake up, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You remember the time we were talking? And it isn't like I'm trying to be Pollyanna here, but we have had these conversations. And I think it's worth repeating because it can leave people so hopeless when you look at this, and especially when it's new, this is all new, you really do feel like you've been socked in the gut. But I remember we were talking one time, and you were talking about this, the fact that those, the ones we know of, the wannabe gods, they're actually controlled by outside whatever.
Influences.
They're atheists, but
they're
you
not,
said that the ones that are really
atheists,
are very aware of the power within us, and that their greatest fear is that enough people will wake up and realize that who we really are, more than just a human being here, but spiritual beings.
Yeah.
And I asked you, how many do you think that would take? And you said, I don't think a lot, because there's not a lot of them.
It's a true story. When someone is standing in a massive crowd, it can yell that the king has no clothes, and the spell is broken.
Yes.
And that's what it takes. It takes a few people who have enough gumption to say, this is enough is enough of all this polite talking round diseases, because it reminds me of a medical hospital, and all the interns go round with the top surgeon or whoever, and they stand at the bottom of a bed and round a patient's bed, and they say, now if you have a big tumor right in the middle of the patient, and you talk about all the secondary symptoms, but you're not allowed to look and talk about that tumor that you can see there, then you're never going to get to the problem. And that's what we hear in the media. We hear these vague rumors of things, vague statements, everything so vague, to do with big changes and big treaties being signed and all this kind of stuff. And we're all so polite, we don't want to say, wait a minute here, could you explain that to me? It's time we stop this stuff and we demand that it be explained, everything be explained fully. Because either government is your master, or it's your servant. There's no in-between here.
Well, I didn't know that government was our servant ever anyway.
That's right.
Governments were never made to be servants.
But that's what people are trained to really believe.
Right.
You vote them in, and somehow they're responsible to you, and that's the oldest con game in the book. Even Plato talked about that. He said democracy always leads to a communistic system, which leads to dictatorship. And this was tried so many times over and over in ancient times, and the reason they keep doing it today is because they know where they're going, and they want to go through these stages, through chaos, etc., to ultimately you have a new king of the world. And that's what their goal is. There will be one day, they hope, to put their own man in there as king of the first king of the entire planet.
In the protocols, they refer to it as the King Despot of the Blood of Zion.
Well, they can call it whatever they want, you know.
And they also refer to it as the Pope of the World.
Same thing. Because all the religions, and this is the problem, people are trapped in their cultural religions that they're born into. And because of that, they follow the guys at the top. The guys at the top of all the religions are part of the same religion, an inner esoteric religion. And I don't care what you belong to, if you're following a mainstream religion, and even the New Age religions, the ones at the top, are all part of a top esoteric elite. You always lead the people through cultural religions.
Didn't you say that the base of that word is ligio or ligio?
To tie, you bind them.
To bind, and religion means to rebind.
That's right.
Religions are man-made.
They're man-made, yeah.
But you didn't acknowledge that statement that we were talking about, that I was talking about. Remember when you said that, Alan?
What was that?
Well, when you said that the real controllers know that there is a power within us, and they don't want us to know it. That's why we've got religions.
And it's also why we have a Sovietized system where the average individual, whether he knows it or not, it's a subconscious thing. He's been trained that you're just, through science, by the way, science is the technique that the Soviets use all along. And again, it's fake science. They train us to believe it's all true. But they tell you you're just a blob of protoplasm that happens to exist, and it's all by chance.
Right.
And so you're nothing special about you, and every function that you have and every drive you have is programmed into you by your DNA and your genes, until you say, well, geez, I'm just a walking cesspool of chemicals here. And that's what you think of yourself. It's time you reclaimed your own personal sovereignty as an individual, unique being. And once you come to that understanding, my God, you find I have a voice and it matters. It matters what you think. And stop being a little blob of protoplasmic jelly. There's more to an individual than that. And they're well aware that a thought that really is thought out in a deep sense is transmitted across the planet as soon as it is put out there, as soon as it comes into being. And the ancients called that thought forms, of course. The Greeks knew all about this. They were trained by the Egyptians. And
they use it. Forms, you know. You remember you told us about that triangle they had set up?
Yeah, the higher black lodges, as they call them.
Yeah, and they're sending out particular, frequencies
will,
or messages? Or
force their will upon those within.
Uh-huh.
With the triangle, yeah. In other words, the 3 points, say, in a state, north, south, and west, and they force their will upon those within. That's one of their higher rituals. So
it's like getting us to speak their language, Alan.
It's almost like almost like hypnotic tapes played in your sleep, you might say.
Yeah, but it's like they give us the language,
uh-huh.
And they've got all these symbolic meanings, these esoteric meanings of words and the language, and yet we speak it.
Mm-hmm.
It is in a sense we are unknowingly speaking their plan.
Their whole language. The whole English language is encoded to bring this about. I'll give you one simple little quick example here. Everyone's been trained by Hollywood. Do you remember when that Moore spoke out about 9/11 on an Oscar night, I think it was, or some big night?
Oh, Michael Moore.
Remember that night he first spoke about that?
Yeah.
Stage? And it's in the same award show, I think it was the actress, her name is Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon.
And she said, we, the culture creators, must speak out about this. Now, that's a direct translation that was always used in the Soviet Union. Because in the Soviet Union, they knew that we emulate what we see. We think we're being entertained here, but not, we're being programmed.
Right, but getting...
Hollywood's function is to create the next step of the next part of the culture.
Okay.
And so, in other words, there are so many techniques. Now, the movies industry used to be called, quite commonly, the cinema. And the cinema, if you speak it in a phonetic sense backwards, is simply Amun is Amun, the god Amun, you see.
Amun is.
Yeah. And that's the single eye of Ra, or Lucifer, and that's the projection that comes out at the back of the hall.
Okay, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Because this came into my mind Monday night.
Uh-huh.
Remember when you were talking about 911?
Yeah.
And you said that 911, 9/11 is a very important date to them, esoterically, symbolically.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it occurred to me when you said that, that we all call it 911.
Yeah.
They gave it to us. I mean, we have 911 as our emergency number.
Exactly.
Now we have 911,
uh-huh.
The Holocaust at the World Trade Center.
That's right. It's also chapter 9, verse 11 of Revelations, where the beast from the bottomless pit, the beast of war, is unleashed.
Okay.
What a coincidence.
So here's the thought I had.
Yeah.
What if we quit using 911?
Mm-hmm.
And it might only be 10 of us, but in other words, we keep saying 911, 911, 911, giving power to that very important date to them.
I know.
Okay, what if we just call it something else? Call it the Holocaust of the World Trade Center.
No, you got to be even careful there, because a Holocaust is a deliberate sacrifice. Wasn't
that a deliberate sacrifice?
For something to be given in return.
The World Trade Center, wasn't it a deliberate sacrifice?
If you understand what you're saying it is.
Yeah.
But for most people, they don't realize that it's the halo, the sun, it's cast into the sun. It's a burnt offering.
Okay, so we just say the World Trade Center.
Yeah, disaster.
Tragedy. My point is, it's sort of like calling our children kids.
I know, goats.
Uh-huh. Oh, I know, but beyond just a baby goat,
uh-huh.
Goat of Mendes is the universal symbol of Satan. So when we call our children kids...
That's right. And of course, that's what the communists also said. Beria said it back in the 1930s, that by neurolinguistics, which is the alteration of the meanings of words, and the substitution of words, we shall demean the human being down to a lower level.
So we call our children the spawn of Satan when we refer to them as kids.
Well, apart from that, what you're doing is put them into a non-human category.
Yeah, okay. So we stop doing that.
Yeah.
Enough people, at least I quit doing it.
Yeah.
And I know other people, when they find out about it, it enraged me, Alan.
Yeah.
But, okay, so what I'm saying is, just on this one particular thing, let's quit calling it 911.
Yeah.
Let's quit playing their game.
Yeah, we should. But again, the whole darned English language is so multi-encoded.
I know, but at least it's not 911.
The thing is, until people can think above the language that they've been trained into, you see, there's more to language than just, and you know it too, we see symbology everywhere. And this symbology, your subconscious, actually it's really the sea of the unconscious which recognizes it. And you can be programmed just as easily through symbology, which they do all the time. We're getting flashed with symbols on TV and ads and magazines and logos. And so, but there's a much higher form of natural symbology too within nature, and that is where the true meditation comes in. That's when your mind is flowing freely and it gets above your conditioning. Instead of meditating yourself into a stupor, you're supposed to meditate yourself into awakefulness. That's the real form of it. And that means that all your faculties are working because you have more senses, you see, to use, which most folk don't use at all.
Well, one thing, we have to have quiet time to do that, and for people who live in cities,
oh yeah,
it has to be a very intentional thing. And I do know that because I was in St. Louis. And, well, we were in the burbs, but you still had traffic and children and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you find a quiet place, but you like, for example, where you live, where I live, it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can hear it. You can hear the birds. You can hear the little peepers at night. You can hear the leaves rustle on the trees.
It's so quiet at night, I can listen to my Ford truck rusting.
There you go. Yeah. Well, that's what... See... So some of us are in that place where it's easy,
mm-hmm.
but for people who are in densely populated areas, it isn't impossible. But you don't put headsets on when you go jogging.
Yeah.
Give yourself some time, like you said, allow those thoughts. If you're in your car, turn the radio off.
Mm-hmm.
Use it for some quiet time. And it's amazing the thoughts that will start rolling through your mind, Alan.
I know.
Even revelation-type things.
Mm. See, children do it naturally. They go into a natural meditative state. If you ever watch them around the age of 3, 4, 5, sometimes their jaw just hangs open and they're staring at something and they're far, far away, but they're in a natural meditative state. That is trained out of us through the school system. We were taught, you know, what are you doing? Daydreaming. Get back here and, you know, pay attention.
Well,
they're destroying a natural meditative state that people used to have right through their entire lives.
And it goes even for us, I mean, who are in the country,
uh-huh.
at the quiet, you put on a television, put on a radio,
uh-huh.
you have shattered the silence.
Shattered it, and also the public have been trained to get up in the morning to the radio.
I know it.
And then all day at work, sometimes in factories they blare music, and shopping malls and
oh my God, everywhere, the elevator, it doesn't matter where you are.
And then you're getting, I don't know if people realize it, you've got all these subliminal messages. There's companies that sell, this is standard, this is not conspiracy here. All those little happy little gee songs you hear in the elevator or in stores have programming in there.
Yeah.
Don't steal or buy, like the movie They Live, which everybody should get and watch.
Yeah.
and then they get back at night from work, they're tired, they put their feet up, they watch the TV. In other words, professional people whose job it is to give you downloading are putting thoughts into your head all day long.
You know what just came into my mind when you were talking about coming home from work tired?
Uh-huh.
Put your feet up and turn the television on.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, I saw a family together without a television on.
Uh-huh.
And that can be. Families can be together without televisions, without radios. They can talk with one another. They can communicate. They can listen. And you know, maybe that's what I'm, in my mind, what I'm talking about is the way we be every single day, as much as we can possibly be, as close as we can, to walk that walk. And I don't care how tired a parent is, if the children have been without the parents all day, they need each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that...
And the problem is, again, you see, the cycle has been...
I'm talking about people who are listening to this broadcast right now.
Mm.
I'm talking...
The families, you mean, yeah?
Four. Two. Yes.
Yeah, and what I'm saying, though, see, this would be fine if you could nip something in the bud before it starts. And all you need is one generation to take it for granted that the state is bringing up your children. And they do subconsciously. They never mention it vocally. But the state has taken over the conditioning long ago of their children. And until they're a state now of socialism, and they don't realize this either. They expect the government should support their children and take care of them in nursery schools and daycare.
And you know, it's amazing if we give children a chance, what they really, really, really respond to. And I know because I've experienced it when the grandchildren come in the summertime and they come out of the city, they go to bed at night listening to the radios. They each have their own individual little players with little headsets. When they come here, Alan, we'll put the TV on to watch a movie, but it isn't like we don't wake up in the morning and turn a television on. I talk to them about the dangers of going to sleep with the radio on. I didn't get hassles from them. When I told the children, and Ashley was 12 at the time, so Amber would have been 7 or 9, whatever, Brandon, they were 12 and under. And I thought that they might think, oh, gee, she's being so silly. But I just simply told them that it occurred to me that when we call our children kids, that we're calling them baby goats. And I said, you are not baby goats. You are children. You are young people. I'm not calling you kids anymore. And I thought they might kind of laugh at me, but they didn't. And when I said, if I, because it sounds kind of formal to me, you know, children, it was hard for me at first, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't slip many times, but I said, if I slip, just remind me, we're not baby goats. And Alan, I slipped a few times. Every time I did, in unison, that's what they said. We're not baby goats, Mama.
Yeah.
And we went outside. We did the garden. One day they were going out. They were shelling peas or something. Amber came in to gather up their little headset radios. And I said, what are you doing, babe? Oh, we're going to... I said, oh, no. I said, just leave the radios in here and just listen to the birds out there. She said, okay. And I heard her tell them that. Mama says, forget the radios and listen to the birds. But in other words, Alan, they respond.
Mm-hmm.
They do respond.
Yeah.
But they need an adult who cares enough to step in there and make the change for them. And I know when they go back home, they go back into it.
Uh-huh.
But when they get their summers here, it's a different experience. It isn't impossible.
It's not impossible, and you've got to realize that something that all dictators down through the thousands of years have known, because this is a science. Everything is based on science and knowledge. Children want to be guided.
Yes.
They really do. You know, we've been trained since the 60s especially, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, that children are rebellious and they don't want guidance. And that's
thanks to Dr. Spock.
Because if you go back even to the young communist party, where they want to divide the young from the old because the old are contaminated with their old thoughts, you see, and then they brought the children up by the state. The same techniques are applied here in a more subdued fashion, but very effective. And all the great dictators know that when they want to take over a country or a world, they always go for the young, and that's why you had the communist youth, the Hitler youth, and every other youth movement that's run by the guys at the top, and even the New Age movement to an extent that bypassed the parents and grabbed the children. And this is all intentional. It's the same techniques over and over again because they never fail. Children actually want guidance. And they want guidance from someone that will spend time with them.
Exactly.
You see?
Exactly.
And take them as an actual, real, living person who will listen to what they say.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I had this picture in my mind, you know, parents coming home, put their feet up on the stool and say, well, how'd your day go, children? What'd you do today? And talk.
Yeah.
And have dinner together.
Yeah.
And talk around the table and laugh and have fun together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what else I found out about them? They love to hear stories about us when we were young.
Sure.
Uh-huh. And when I get going, they'll say, tell us another one, Momo. tell us another one. You know, sometimes your thoughts just pop out and you tell them something and they get a big kick out of it. And they'll just sit and they eat it up.
Yeah.
And that's
what we need, spontaneity. Yeah.
Maybe if somebody says, "What can I do?"
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that right there is the important thing in the whole world, is the way we be with one another.
Yeah.
The way we be with our friends, our spouses, our loved ones, or anybody, but especially family. Keep it together.
It's continuity. Continuity.
Yeah, and have that.
Generations.
And have a family be a haven,
mm-hmm,
for each and every individual in that family. They all have their little lives they go about, and the one safe place there, at least for the children growing up, is there. Because mom and dad are there, or maybe mom or maybe dad. If it's only one parent, then you got to do it for both.
Yeah, you remember what Maurice Strong said at the Earth Summit, and he was on that Earth Summit was made up by one of the Rockefellers, actually, and Maurice Strong just presented it, and that affects the whole world. Once again, this big NGO organization, unelected, making our world plans for us, and Maurice Strong said that the last vestige of the family must be destroyed. And that's the old communist regime again, because...
There you go.
Because continuity between generations was their big enemy, because a small family is representative of a tribe.
Yeah, okay.
And they destroyed the tribe long ago. When there's no family that will stand up together, then government is your direct master, directly to the individual.
Your big brother who loves you.
That's right, and you have nobody to turn around to help you. And that's what I've always known.
We have 1 minute left to go here tonight.
Yeah. Well, people have to get themselves into gear, and they have to realize it's coming on fast. And they've got to start to be honest with themselves. And once that happens, you'd be amazed what happens.
Yes.
Within those around you, and even at great distances, too.
At great distances. You know what? I'd like to talk more about that maybe next Wednesday night, when you were talking about a thought. We talked about this once before, and it is so exciting. And I'd like to revisit that maybe next Wednesday night, okay?
Sure.
Thank you. And folks, remember that Alan's website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. If you haven't seen the video, what was it called? A reality. A reality check?
Yep.
Watch it, folks. And there's lots of of Alan's broadcast on there too, and of course sweetliberty.org.
Most Americans want our government to control our borders, especially since 9/11. But amazingly, some political leaders want to do away with borders entirely, whether the American people agree or not. And they have a serious plan for accomplishing their aims while deceiving the public. It's called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, or FTA.